Welcome to the only podcast for piano teachers just starting out, Piano Teacher Primer. My name is Angela Toon. Keep listening for the prime pro tips you can use with your own students right away. Welcome to the Piano Teacher Primer podcast. Super excited to have another interview for you today. This is Dr. Elizabeth Davis Everhart, DMA. She specializes in teaching piano to exceptional learners and students with disabilities. Elizabeth, we should have you say hi.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me, Angela.
Yes, this is so fun. So Elizabeth runs a private in-person and virtual studio, leads online pedagogy courses, and is the founder of Creative Piano Pedagogy, a blog with adaptive piano teaching resources for teachers. Elizabeth is passionate about connecting with teachers and empowering them with the knowledge and tools to teach the students in front of them. She and her husband, James, live in beautiful Savannah, Georgia, with their Siberian Husky, Rory. I was just telling her she needs to post pictures of Rory more so that we can meet her. And when she's not teaching, Elizabeth enjoys reading, baking bread in particular, gardening and fishing and traveling. I like those things too.
kind of gets you out of the house a little bit.
Yeah, we got it. We got to get out and get some sunshine. I've got sunshine today, so that's good.
I'm glad you do. It's a rainy day here in Georgia.
Rainy there. Yes, we had a lot of those. Well, as we do on the Piano Teacher Primer podcast, we love to hear how people started teaching and how you got your start. So tell us.
Well, I love hearing those journeys too. And as I've listened to your podcast, it's so cool to hear how music has fit into the lives of different teachers. And I have enjoyed learning about those journeys too. Mine started at age 3. And I was a very, very rambunctious 3-year-old with very severe ADHD. So I had been to multiple therapies and doctors and, you know, late 80s, early 90s, this research was kind of new. So
were they even diagnosing girls at that time?
They were. And the whole solution was try Ritalin. So it was all like, try this. And if that doesn't work, we don't really know what to do with you. So I was one of those kids that it did not work. It actually made me much more hyper and drove me up the wall. And my poor parents, I was their firstborn. They were like, what is going on with this kid? So, you know, my mother was a really good piano teacher and she played in churches, excellent pianist. And so I grew up surrounded by music, but I had all of this energy. And I think a lot of us probably, I don't know when our first memories start. I think that's kind of an interesting thing too, but I have memories of at that age, trying to sit still. That's one of my memories. It's just trying to sit still because I had so much energy and my poor little body just wouldn't cooperate. And finally, my parents were talking and one of the doctors said, what can we do to give Elizabeth something to do with her fingers to keep her very busy? And my dad looked at my mom and my mom said, no, I can't do it. I cannot teach her piano because she's my daughter. And I just don't know if that's going to go well. But my mom started teaching me a little each day. And since I was at home with her, she would just bring me to the piano. And my mom said it was like a switch and my brain flipped. And I became so focused, even at such a young age, and so interested. And my fingers just figured out what to do. And it's like, I felt very calm and focused when I was doing this thing. Oh. And so I just totally and completely fell in love with a piano. And I have memories at age 3 and age 4 going throughout the house to find my mom and drag her to the piano. And I would say, more songs now, please. And I would just beg her to show me more music because I loved it so much. And so that just kind of sparked the flame, I guess, of love for music. And it just kept going. And I ended up studying some other instruments as well, violin and organ. But piano has been the thing that I've loved. And, you know, I don't remember In preparing for this podcast, I was thinking, when did I decide I wanted to become a piano instructor, a piano teacher? I don't remember when I made that decision, but I know around age 10, 11, I thought, this is what I want to do. I want to do something with music because it's so powerful. And I even remember at that young age thinking, this is really beautiful. And I wonder if I could share that with others. So I guess that's kind of how it got started.
So the thought was there before you actually started teaching. You're like,
yes,
music is.
Well, and I had some wonderful teachers. My mom was my teacher for a long time until I was about 10. So for 7 years, from 3 to 10, and she did a great job. I mean, I got a doctorate, so she did a great job.
Amazing. I tried teaching my kids and I started them all, and then you need to go to another teacher because you're not listening to me anymore.
Well, and for my mom, I think she kind of thought maybe I could learn more from somebody else, because she was like, wow, you're playing, you know, advanced classical repertoire. We need to find somebody who specializes in this. And so she kept teaching me ear training and hymn playing, and we still play duets together. Even when we're together for Christmas or holidays or when I'm visiting, we'll pull out Sleigh Ride or some of our favorites, and we still love. So I love that I can still share that with my mom. But yes, I think that thought was there many years before I started teaching piano.
Yeah. So when was your first actual student?
My first student, I was 17 and I was a college freshman.
Oh, yeah.
So my college piano professor started like a mentorship program for young teachers. And so he was like, okay, Elizabeth, I have a kindergarten student and we're going to teach her together. And so, you know, and this was before my first pedagogy course. I didn't even take a pedagogy course, I think my second year in college. So I was just starting, you know, I had no idea. I was like, you know, Dr. McElwain, that was his name. I was like, I don't know what to do. I've never had a class in this. I'm 17 years old. And he was like, well, you've seen me teach. You've seen lots of teachers. So we're going to go through it together. And that was a terrifying experience for me because I didn't want to mess up this kid's experience. You know, I didn't want to be the one to like teach something wrong. But Dr. McElwain was an amazing mentor. My mom helped me. I had tons of people I could ask, what do you do for this? So I taught this little girl, I think her name was Grace, all those years ago, together with my mentor. And that just sort of, she was my first student.
Did your mom teach other kids?
Yes, she had a full studio my entire childhood. And I mean, what a great thing to hear like amazing classical music and hymns and Christmas music being played throughout our house. And I actually did get in trouble for a few things I did during her lessons. And the one I remember, she was teaching the famous minuet in G major, and da 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 dum bum bum. And she had a student who was kind of struggling with the B section. And I remember, I think I was 4 or 5, and I usually wore my little like headphones with my Walkman and colored or like red books. Yeah. But I came in and I remember saying, "Excuse me, that is the wrong note." And my mom was like, okay, she can't be home when I'm teaching piano anymore because this was a 20-year-old and you're 4. This can't happen. So you know.
I know enough to know that was wrong.
I had heard that piece a number of times and I guess kind of humming it along. But my poor mother, her face was like all shades of red and purple, you know.
That's hilarious. That is such a cute story.
But definitely a love for music in our home, and yeah. I just wanted to share it.
That's so awesome. So were you a pedagogy major in college?
I was a music ed major, actually.
Music ed?
And so I did music ed with a minor in piano and then a minor in organ.
Oh, that's awesome. Then your feet could be active too.
Yes, and I have been a church organist since then, until this year. This is my first year I haven't worked as a church organist. So that served me very well. But I, my student teaching, I did piano, and I also did K-8 music and high school choir. So that's kind of what I wanted to do, honestly. I had an amazing mentor who was a music educator at a huge school near me. And so I would go observe her while I was in college, and I started accompanying her choirs, and they were so artistically beautiful in their singing and even at the young ages of the groups. So that enticed me into creating a lot of musicality in young children. So I always taught piano, but I was kind of like interested in doing the K through eight. So I actually did that after college for a year or two. And then I decided, you know what? I really miss just teaching piano. And so that's when I went back for a master's, and it just kind of, the trajectory shifted just a little.
And your master's is?
It's piano pedagogy and performance.
Piano pedagogy and performance.
It is. Cool. So I always tell my students, you have to play well. Even if you think you don't want to perform, you still have to be able to play well. And as teachers, we need to be able to play all those beautiful pieces for our students.
Yes.
But yes,
I agree.
That's kind of where it shifted a little bit away from the classroom music. I still have used a lot of those skills because I have had and done a lot of childhood music classes over the years for young children. So, and helped with lots of choirs and things. So those skills are not lost at all, but just more concentrated on piano.
Yeah, yeah, that's so good. And I love choir. I'm a choir nerd. I joined a choir last year, and I'm like, it's such a beautiful outlet for me to just sing.
Yes.
And I'm all about piano, obviously, but just being able to just sing and like create music in a different way.
Yes.
And it's challenging for the voice. So yes. Yeah, choir nerd, piano nerd.
Yes.
It's the best. It's the best.
It really is.
Yeah. So your blog, have you been doing your blog a long time?
I started the blog in 2020.
Yeah.
I had been thinking about the blog for a long time, but life got so busy when I was doing that doctoral program and just had no time to do anything else. So the idea was brewing for quite a long time, probably 5 years or more. But when it actually started was the fall of 2020. I finally did it.
Yay!
And so I'm still working on getting regular posts up. It's been a work in progress because life just gets busy, and then you meet your husband and you get married.
Yeah.
So yeah. Lots of good surprises. But yes, I have wanted to have a blog like that and a way to just encourage growth in teaching and thinking about teaching in a different way. All of our pedagogy is so centered on like standard repertoire, and here's how you teach rhythm, and here's how you teach this. But what about those students that none of those things work for? That's the ones I love. Those are the kids I love. So, and there's a lot of other teachers out there that have kids that, like me, when I was a youngster, things didn't work for them. So that's who I want to reach.
Oh, that's beautiful. So that's where the creative kind of was born, is not just your traditional methods, but a creative approach. And I'm thinking an individualized approach. What's going to work for that child?
Yes, absolutely. And with thinking creatively, you have to take everything you know about this subject. Maybe it's like pedaling, and thinking about what do I know about this student and where can I combine the two to find something that's unique for this kid.
Yes. Yes, that is a gift. And what is going to give them that incremental success?
Yes. We really want to encourage joy. That's what we want to do in music. We want to encourage joy. And the way our students will feel the most joy from music is when they are successful. And success is a very subjective thing. It's not objective. But what a beautiful thing to be able to get to know our student so well that we can give them the tools that can become joy, you know?
Yes. Oh, this is beautiful stuff. And then not just ADHD, other disabilities. Tell us some more about that. Go into some areas where you've had experience and some suggestion in case there's teachers out there that have a student with these different challenges and what you would recommend.
Sure. Even during college, as I was doing student teaching, I noticed some of my students did not learn the way other students I taught did, or other kids I'd been around. And so I just started collecting information from these kids, observing them, taking notes, That was something my mentor really suggested, and my grandfather. My grandfather said, learn something every day and write it down. So I try to do that in my teaching and remember something that worked or something that didn't for each student every day. It's very encouraging to look back on as a teacher, kind of like a success journal or a growth journal, but it helps you keep perspective of the individuality of each student. So I started noticing so many individual characteristics. And after I graduated and went on to master's study, I was like, wow, these students, I think, have traits of autism. And I started researching autism and dyslexia. And then I had students who were showing traits of oppositional defiant disorder. And then I had some that had apraxia of speech or dyspraxia and hypermobility and all of these things. And so, and then I would have a student that had all of those things combined. So I just started, you know, observing and learning, wow, this is very complex, but it's all focused on the student. And that's actually why I chose the university I did for my doctorate, because at that time, it was the only university in the world that had a course for doctoral and master's students on teaching students with disabilities in piano. So, and the founder of that course, Dr. Scott Price, ended up being my mentor, my private instructor, and was on my dissertation committee. He worked with me on my dissertation. So this all fueled my interest of how can we get this information to piano teachers who are just sitting at home, have a wonderful studio, and they're like, this kid is not learning like my other students. So that's what encouraged my dissertation project on how to teach music reading to students with autism.
I was just going to ask you.
It all kind of wound up with that one big project. And then the blog was kind of born out of a desire to make it practical because, you know, how many people do I have saying, hello, Dr. Davis Everhart, could you send me a link to your 300-page dissertation? I mean, I don't even want to read my dissertation. I wrote it. Okay. Actually, I take that back. I actually referenced it last week because I couldn't find something. So it's useful. But it's not something that's practical. So, you know, taking the information and figuring out a way to make it enjoyable and more practical for teachers.
Yeah. Digestible and applicable to their studio right away.
Yes, absolutely. And not just a research document. Mm-hmm. But autism, but
the research is behind what you share, so that's awesome.
It is, and that is the one thing I'm also very passionate about, is making sure everything I share is not just anecdotal, or when I share something that's just anecdotal, I want people to know this is my experience. But almost everything I share has a huge foundation in research from the big places like child development, child psychology, looking at the milestones of children and how they learn music. It's all very factually based, because that's where we learn those really interesting things. And then we can say, okay, how does that apply to music and piano? So that's kind of where my worlds intersect, I guess.
Amazing. I love it. And then you have courses for piano teachers too?
Yes, this is kind of a new thing I did in the last couple of years. I've been writing this course for over a year, Adaptive Piano Pedagogy 101. Mm-hmm. And again, trying to find a way to give information in a practical, applicable way, but also just give teachers the tools they need. Because teachers don't need just statistics on how many kids are diagnosed with autism. It's a lot, but they don't need that. And there's a lot of other courses on a lot of other things, but what we need to know is, what are these disabilities? How can we become educated and compassionate about the disabilities? There's so many. And then how can we learn how to communicate with those students in a way that makes them incredibly successful? So that's what that course does. It's a long course. It's 10 weeks. And it is nice. One of my attendees said it was on the magnitude of like a master's level course with the amount of information. But it's very digestible because we go through all of the things together, and there's a huge community part as well. We have a private Facebook group, so we share ideas. And honestly, it's been hugely encouraging for me, because I have learned from the teachers who are in the course what they're doing. I'm like, oh, that's what I do too. Or I have never thought of that. Mm-hmm. And we have all just felt such camaraderie in thinking, oh, I teach that differently too. Yeah, I don't follow what that's, you know, and knowing, oh yeah, I don't follow that method book because, you know, XYZ, or, oh, I use this one. Like, what an amazing way and a safe place to share, to grow, and just such grace between the teachers and kindness, and just all out of a desire to teach kids who are often misunderstood.
Wow. Yes. When great minds get together, yes. beautiful things
yes.
can happen. Yeah. And a 10-week, and I could even see like a teacher taking your course and almost kind of specializing in students like this. And I'm sure that there are parents that they don't know where to turn next, and teachers have maybe turned their kid down. And I have one friend who, yeah, she has a lot of students on the autism spectrum, and she's getting a lot older, but she still teaches like 50 something students. And she just says, yeah, I keep getting these autistic kids. I just kind of collect them and they just keep coming over. And so I haven't talked to her about exactly how she handles that, but she loves it.
Wow. It takes a special teacher. I think every piano teacher is special, but when you find a teacher who has the patience and the desire to teach things differently, you know, mm-hmm. I think our training can be such a beautiful thing, but also such a difficult thing, because we're taught the traditional canon of this is what you do. But when you have to kind of put that aside and look at dyslexia, or look at autism and dyslexia, or whatever, and view it through that lens, it changes what you do. It doesn't change the pedagogy, but it changes your approach, because everything you do is focused on the child.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I have one who, epileptic, autism spectrum, probably some other, and he didn't start with me till he was in high school.
Wow.
And he's a full, you know, adult now, but will never be able to live on his own. And he doesn't even mind that he's just in the little primer book levels.
Oh.
But he's playing Hands Together now and duets with me. And I do. I have to kind of throw out expectations. The expectations are, I know that he needs to vent for 5 minutes at the beginning of the lesson. I can't just be like, okay, well, we need to get going and we'll talk about this later. It's like, it needs to be right now. So we just let him vent. And then he doesn't mind repeating things a lot. You know, a lot of kids are like, I played it 2 times already. I'm done.
No, they don't mind. And
he doesn't mind at all.
No, and it's like that. There is such a thing as hyper-focus, and a lot of kids with disabilities can enter this state of hyper-focus where they're like, I want to do it again. I want to do it again. Yeah. And I have to cut them off. I'm like, no, you've already done it 5 times. But you're absolutely right. There's so many different theories out there and opinions, but I approach each lesson with absolutely no expectations. My only expectation is to see what happens, see what we can get done. It is 99% of the time more than I think we can accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
I've been so surprised. I love that. And I have a new student. I just started in the fall, and his first lesson with me, he couldn't find middle C. I knew he'd had some lessons before, but I was a little uncertain as to exactly what he studied, and he wasn't able to tell me. So we just started improvising together. And then the next week, we're a little more comfortable with each other. You know, we've gotten to know each other a little bit. So we're improvising some more to just see what he can do with his fingers. And he plays a B major scale. I was like, oh, where did you learn that pattern? And he was like, well, it's so easy. White, 2 black, white, 3 black, white. So he gives me the, you know, the color combination of the keys for the B major scale. And I was like, well, do you know any others? And he didn't know at all what they were called. He had no idea it was a scale. But in his mind, it was just white, 2 black, white, 3 black, one, you know.
And well, those thinking, patterns.
Yeah, so it's like he knew so much more than he thought he knew.
Uh-huh.
And so we just have to give them a chance to show us what they know in their own way.
Mm-hmm.
And not put them in such strict boxes of, can you play this? Okay, I guess not. Can you play this? Oh, I guess not. And just give them chances. Yeah. Show me what you know. And you'll often be surprised.
And I'm sure that you probably use that pattern language to show him everything in a different way. You're not going to be pointing to the notes as much. You're going to be showing him patterns on the keyboard every time.
Yes. He's starting to learn to correlate on the staff. And he actually reads very well on the staff. Probably better than correlating like A, B, C, D, E, F, G, which is interesting. Mm. He just does very well with spaces and lines. I think he loves shapes. So that kind of is some kind of geometry to him, like the shapes and correlating them. His mind is so brilliant. So it's fun to figure out what he knows and let him show me, because if you allow your students with disabilities, they will teach you a lot. You just have to be willing.
And then that joy, that is the goal.
Yes.
Is that they are having fun creating music.
Yes. And they're often capable of so much more than we can ever know. They're brilliant. We just have to give them the creative space and the flexibility to learn.
That is so beautiful. I love that. This is so inspiring. Oh my gosh. I love it so much. And different than anybody I've had on. So I just love that too. I love just offering my listeners like just such different approaches to teaching. And chances are you're going to get a child that is going to be some special challenges. And so
absolutely.
Some resources. I
mean, you know, even if you just have a squirmy kid, you know, if you can just look up some of the things about ADHD and learn, okay, this is how they learn. Or if you have a child who is having trouble reading music, or, you know, pull out that colorful overlay and teach them as if you think they might have some dyslexic traits. Go ahead and use the principles, because it's not like you are diagnosing them. You're just going to use those principles. And chances are it will work. It really will.
That is so awesome. Well, let's lead into your top three tips for beginning teachers.
This was a hard question, Angela, but it really made me think. So I loved that you asked me this question. So my top three tips for beginning teachers, the first one is just observe. Keep notes on your teaching. Observe what works and what doesn't. Which areas of the lesson did the student have the most questions about your instructions? Which instructions did you have to repeat? Hone the way you give instructions at the piano to make it very succinct and clear. Are you allowing your student enough time at the piano to play and learn and discover rather than you talking the whole time? And keep the student's attention level as your guide. Are they engaged, bored, overwhelmed? So observe. And then teach to the student. That's the second one. Remember that you are not teaching repertoire. You're not teaching WC, Faber, Gershwin. You're teaching a child, a student right in front of you. Mm-hmm. So you need to keep them at the center, not the repertoire and not anything else. Keep their abilities and needs at the center of everything you do.
There's the last one is Clark quote.
Yes.
Isn't there, that goes right along with that, that we first teach the child, we teach music, and third in that order, we teach piano.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. And the last tip I would give is just to continually learn. Students are the best teachers if we can learn with them, from them. And then in turn, a teacher who is a continual student is the best teacher. So if you continue to learn, and it's not that you have to research absolutely everything or be an expert in everything, but if something comes up that puzzles you, look it up, ask someone, and just be very curious. A good teacher is a curious teacher.
That is so perfect. Oh my gosh, I love that. And then, there's so much available to learn how to improve your piano teaching now. There's no excuses, people.
There's no excuses. I mean, if anything, we probably have too much information, right?
Yeah.
But dig into what is curious to you right now. And that's a good place to start.
Mm. Yeah, following that natural curiosity that you have, and that will guide you to the resources you can seek out and the information that you need. And I was interested when you kind of corrected yourself, learning with your students, learning from your students. It's learning with them and from them
Yes.
I think, and learning for them.
Yes. We're never complete in the learning process. And that's not a discouraging thing. It sounds as discouraging, but it's really an encouraging thing because we're all students in some way. I'm a student of sourdough right now. I'm learning to bake sourdough. So yum. That's my thing. I'm learning. And my students are in learning processes of their own. So if we can always stay a learner, I think we'll always relate well to our students.
Yes, yes. And you mentioned organ. I'm a newbie organist.
Oh, yay. That's wonderful.
I guess a couple of years ago, I started lessons and my teacher moved. So I'm just kind of figuring it out on my own. But she gave me all the, because I wanted to learn it the right way. And I really do relate to my students more by being a beginner. Yes. In that. So yeah, I could go on and on about that, but well, tell me then your blog, tell me how people can find your blog. I'll link it for sure.
Yes. So my website is elizabethdavispiano.com, and that has my blog. You can also find it on Instagram and Facebook at Creative Piano Pedagogy. And that has information about courses and the weekly teaching tips and sometimes glimpses of my dog or my students, but
more of that.
Yes. So that's where you can find me.
Yay. Elizabeth, thank you so much. I really appreciate it for what I learned for my own studio. And I'm excited to dive into your blog too and look up different other challenges that I have in my studio and how I can solve them better and meet the needs of the students better. And I'm super excited just for my listeners to have a different approach for these different students with different challenges. We just have to approach it differently. And I just love your joy and your what? Assurance with yourself. You're just really amazing. So thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me. You know, it sounds like a lot of work to dig into disabilities and to think about teaching differently, but it is so worth it to get to share the joy of music to kids who may otherwise not be able to experience that. So if you're on the fence and you're thinking, oh, I don't know if I should dig into this or not, it feels very big, it's always so worth it to get to know a child in front of you and to be able to share music with them.
Yeah, to feel empowered to know what to do. Yes. For that child. Thank you so much. I 100% agree.
Well, thank you for having me.
Before you go, a quick note. Your dedication to piano education is keeping the music alive. If you have found value in our conversation, please leave a rating or a review and share it with a fellow piano teacher. Together, we're changing the world, one student at a time. Until next week, play on.